This is Audible.
Audible Original Publishing presents Kick-Ass with Mel Robbins. Advice from the author of The 5-Second Rule. Created and hosted by Mel Robbins. That's me. I'm Mel, and you're about to listen to live coaching sessions between me and real people facing real problems, and you'll have a front row seat as they experience real change. By the way, I want to tell you right up front, this is not something for the kiddos. The people you're about to meet, they're all adults, dealing with adult issues. And personally, I use a lot of adult language. You and I are about to spend a whole bunch of time together, so let me take a minute and tell you just a little bit about me. 10 years ago, I was facing one of the hardest periods of my life. I could barely do the simple things. And the worst part of my day? Just trying to get out of bed. As soon as my alarm went off, I would lie there and think about everything I needed to do. My mind started filling with excuses, and next thing you know, I'm hitting the snooze button. Well, one night after a few too many Manhattans, I had this epiphany. There was a distinct gap between the alarm going off and my reaction to it. And I thought, Mel, I wonder, maybe if you move fast enough, maybe you can close that gap. Instead of hitting the snooze alarm, maybe I could just launch out of bed. Well, the very next morning, the alarm rang, and that's exactly what I did. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom, I launched myself right out of bed. It not only worked, but that's also how, by accident, I created the most powerful mind trick on the planet. I call it the 5-second rule. It's simple, and there's so much science to back it up. Now, using the 5-second rule and the 5-4-3-2-1 countdown method, I learned how to change my decisions, my mindset, my habits, and day by day, my entire life changed. I first shared the rule in a TEDx talk, and 14 million views later, I decided, I better write a book about this. Well, it got published last year, it became one of the most read books in the world, and it's now been translated into 31 languages. And yep, you can find it right here on Audible. The response was so incredible that I now reach 20 million people a month on social media. And every single day, people around the world post their 5-second rule stories and ask for more advice about how to change their lives for the better. And that, my friend, is how Kick-Ass with Mel Robbins was born. It was born thanks to you. So you might be wondering, how do we choose the people you're about to meet? That's a great question. We did a global casting call on social media using the hashtag PickMeMel. We asked people to upload videos explaining why they're stuck and deserve to be flown to Boston in order to get the coaching session of their lifetime with yours truly. Now, we were blown away by your submissions, like this one from Parker.
What's up, Mel? My name is Parker Texas Lewis. I'm a senior at the University of North Texas studying engineering, and I'm in desperate need of being coached by you because I am honestly falling apart. Now, I haven't done laundry in like 2 months. I have so many things that I need to do that I can't even get myself to start, and I can't keep the streak going.
And the thing about streaks? Sometimes you're in a good one, sometimes you're in a bad one, and sometimes you get stuck in one for decades, like Joelle.
Hi, Mel. I would love to come to Boston and be personally coached by you. Where I am stuck is in my relationship. I have been married 19 years, going on 20, and our relationship sucks.
Parker, Joelle, that was just the beginning. We got submissions from around the world.
Hi, Mel. My name is Lujan. I'm from Argentina.
Hi, Mel. My name is Sandy, and I'm a meditation teacher.
I had talked myself out of recording this thing 2 or 3 times. I'm 62 years old. I don't have 15 years to try to figure all this stuff out.
My name is Nora Azim. I'm from Malaysia. Pick me, Mel.
Hey, Mel Robbins. This is Yvette. I am tormented with self-doubt and fear, and I just have to stop this nonsense. What the fuck's wrong with me, Mel? I'm ready to go to Boston. My bags are packed. Please, please, please help me and pick me.
So we weeded through all of these videos and narrowed it down to 8 people. 8 people that we thought you could relate to. Now, these folks represent a range of problems, from simple to serious, hilarious to heartbreaking. And you're about to meet these people, hear their problems, and listen live as they get the coaching session of their life.
My name is Kim.
My name is Kyle.
My name is Evelyn.
My name is Jesse.
My name is Marcus Ogden.
I'm Ashlyn Nicasu.
My name is Stephen Hill.
My name is Tara Morris.
And before we get started, I need to remind you, all 8 people you're about to meet are adults, This has adult language and adult content, and when there are very serious issues, I will be sure to give you a trigger warning. I believe that we're all just one decision away from a totally different life. And that new life, it could actually start right now. You know what you need to do to improve your life, and you might even know why you need to do it. Now, I'm going to show you how. Welcome to Kick Ass with Mel Robbins. In this coaching session, you're going to meet a woman named Kim. Kim was very clear why she wanted my help. She's struggling with the fear of failure, and she is so tired of her own negative self-talk.
My name is Kim. I'm 43 years old. I live just north of Los Angeles. I need some help in getting over my fear so that I can do things for myself. Fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of being laughed at. Just fighting myself and fighting my own mind and trying to get past that and the negative self-talk and the self-doubt. And it's definitely all comes from inside of me.
Don't let her serious tone of voice fool you. Kim is one of the most hilarious people you will ever meet.
It's about to get real.
Okay, good.
Raw, naked, exposed. This is going to get ugly.
Good.
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
I can't be the only person that does this because I think in my head, I am fucking crazy.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Aisha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name is Lisa. I'm from Brazil.
54321. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall. The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit. Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick Ass with Mel Robbins.
Hey, Kim.
Oh, my God. I totally was not nervous, and now I'm nervous.
What are you nervous about?
I don't know. What's going to happen?
Tell me a little bit about what brought you here. And I know it's fear, but can you talk a little bit more and explain a little bit more for me in detail about the fears that are holding you back and how they hold you back?
I don't even start something because I'm so afraid that I'll have to actually do something about it. You know, in my life, I have done what I'm supposed to do. I raise my daughter, I go to work, I pay my bills, but I don't have anything that I'm super proud of for me. So I don't have any sort of sense of pride. I have no hobbies that I like to dig into. I don't have anything for myself, because I'm too afraid to start anything. There's a lot of stuff that I want to do. You know, I want to do things like working with wood and maybe creating furniture, maybe making something, but I don't know how to do it. So I don't even start because I'm so afraid that it's going to, the couple of things that I have created, I think that they're totally stupid and someone's going to laugh and that.
So what have you created?
God, you know, I, my boyfriend and I built our little garden and now it's gone to shit because we don't take care of it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So when did this type of fear begin?
I feel like I've had it my whole life.
Can you remember the first time where you really wanted to do something and this fear was there?
Yeah. So when I was in fourth grade, I was a baton twirler. And
of course you were.
Well, duh.
Yes.
So I've always been big, right? I'm 5'10". I'm tall. I'm a big person. I have big hair and big features and I'm just big. So
were you big in fourth grade too?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. And of course I thought I was fat, but come on, you know, what 10-year-old is, you know, whatever. So, I was pretty good and I was the leader of my little, you know, troop. And, And then I was taking private lessons with my teacher, and I couldn't do what's called a two-spin. You throw your baton up in the air, you twirl around two times, and then you catch it.
Okay.
And I was having a really hard time trying to get that. We were going to have to do a performance in for the Junior Olympics, which would have been in front of the whole school.
Okay.
And at that time, I was just mortified. I was like, I can't do it. Telling myself, I can't do this. I can't get up in front of my friends and perform in my stupid leotard with my big thighs and my butt hanging out. And how embarrassing. And so I quit.
And wait, before you went?
Yeah. I told my parents, I can't get my two spin. I don't want to do this anymore. I quit. But I didn't quit because I couldn't get the two spin. I quit because I didn't want to perform in front of everybody and have them laugh at me.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So did your instructor say anything when you quit?
She asked me, why are you quitting? You're doing good. You just have to keep practicing. This stuff doesn't, you don't get the stuff overnight. It's hard work. And I don't like putting in hard work.
Well,
because so that's how my history has gone. I stop before I even start because I already know I'm gonna fail. It's not gonna work.
Well, you know what's interesting about the story is that by quitting, you actually you developed a strategy that really works for you.
Oh yeah, it's really working, isn't it?
Well, not now, but it really works for you when you are in a situation where you feel uncomfortable or you feel exposed,
mm-hmm.
or you feel uncertain, then quitting or just saying, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's your way to protect yourself and to keep yourself safe.
Absolutely.
And the irony is that you keep doing it in the areas of your life that could bring you joy.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And you know, the other thing that's really sad is that, you know, when you end up doing that to yourself, you end up having nothing but feelings of failure.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, this is the irony of that strategy. And we're going to call it a strategy because you do it deliberately.
Yes.
And you continued to do it deliberately. So it became a habit. You start to feel exposed. You start to feel the unknown. You immediately respond by doing the same thing, which is saying no or quitting or disappearing or hiding or whatever it may be. And you do it to avoid failure.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing you feel is failure.
Mm-hmm.
So the strategy doesn't work. And in fact, the strategy gives you the damn thing you're avoiding.
Right.
Where else have you done this?
With everything.
Take me through your day. So how does fear in your day dictate how you act from the moment that you wake up? Let's go through like a day in the life of Kim,
mm-hmm.
and take me through the wackadoodle shit that's going on in your head.
Oh man, it's about to get real.
Okay, good.
Raw, naked, exposed. This is going to get ugly. Are you ready?
Oh yeah.
I can't be the only person that does this because I think in my head, I am fucking crazy.
We all are.
But I can't be the only one that does this. And I think maybe that's part of why I'm here, because I'm not extraordinary. I don't have this fantastical life story. Like, I'm just trying to get through life like everybody else. So I am a smoker. I've been a smoker for 28 fucking years. How disgusting is that?
I don't know. You must love it.
It's totally oh, love hate. Total love hate.
You know my theory about smoking.
No.
So my theory about smoking is that smoking is a fuck you to life.
Pretty much.
That every time
Pretty
you
much.
Light up, it's
yeah.
the rebel in you.
Yeah.
No, you know that you could, that you will probably die from it. You
yeah.
know that you could die from it. You
yep.
know that it's bad for you. You know that the cigarette companies have tricked you into an addiction that makes them tons of money and
yeah.
keeps you struggling financially. You know that it's stupid, you hate standing outside, but every time you light it up, you put that sucker to your mouth and you're like, watch me, fuckers. I'm
yeah,
doing it anyway.
Pretty much.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I've lived my whole life, and it does not serve me at all. Being a rebel is the worst thing that you can do to yourself.
Why?
I'm so rebellious. Look at me. Really? Because you just held yourself back from everything that you could have done because you think that you're so fucking awesome being a rebel. Yeah, no. No. Not at all. So here's my day. So let me walk you through my
Yes, I
want to
hear
awesome
this
day.
Because I want to know, if you're as nuts as I am. If you were to put a speaker on people's heads and broadcast that garbage, there'd be nobody on the sidewalk because we'd all be locked up. The stuff we say to ourselves, not so. So let's see if you're more nuts than me. Probably not.
It is crazy. Like the shit I say to myself, I wouldn't say to my worst enemy. I would never talk to somebody like that. So, okay. So
the alarm goes off.
I wake up at 5 and I have to get up. I don't snooze. If I snooze, I'm out for hours. So I get up. I make my first cup of coffee. I sit on the computer, like literally on Facebook, YouTube, and Hotlook shopping for like an hour. Okay. I've smoked 4 cigarettes by this time. Snuggling my cat. Now it's been an hour and I've done nothing. I have this 3-bedroom house and we have 2 bedrooms downstairs that aren't really used, but I call one of them my yoga room because I am such a yogi. So for the whole hour, I'm sitting there going, I should really go downstairs. Yeah, I should really go downstairs. I should really go stretch. I should really go meditate. And I've made it all cute and, you know, like lovely and warm and inviting. And I have pillows and couches and, you know, whatever. Oh, it's so cold down there. It's like 65 down there. I'll be freezing. I need another cup of coffee. Well, I don't really want to smoke down there, so I'll just keep smoking. So then I make my second cup of coffee, and now it's been an hour and a half, and I've done nothing. I've done shit. I'm like, I guess I better get ready for work. So then I get in the shower, and I stand there for 20 minutes going, it's so warm in the shower. And then I get out, and I get ready, I do my makeup, and then I go into the kitchen, and I make my protein smoothie because I'm so healthy. And then I can't drink my smoothie while I'm doing my hair because, you know, that's kind of weird. So now I have to sit there, and I also live on the water too. So I want to look at the ocean while the sun is rising. And, you know, that's like that truly is like my meditation time when I'm looking out at the ocean. But, you know,
sounds awesome.
I have to drink my smoothie, which means I have 20 minutes to kill. So I might as well smoke 4 more cigarettes.
How many packs do you smoke a day?
Like a pack and a half.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Holy shit is right. So by this time, it's been 2.5 hours. Okay. 2.5 hours of, doing nothing. I could get ready in 45 minutes and drink 2 cups of coffee and my freaking smoothie and snuggle my cat. So then I go to work and I do my 8 hours at work and then I come home and I do a whole lot more of what I did in the morning.
Do you want to quit smoking?
Yes, and actually, I have the patch on right now. I've been trying for about a week and a half.
So okay, slowly, how's it going?
I have quit before many times in my life, so I know that it's not hard, and the patch, like, does miracles for you, for the physical body, which when you don't have the physical craving, keeps it out of your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's like any addiction. You just... It's so fucking hard.
Well, you know, I smoked in college. So I was a pack and a half a day smoker in college. And then I got a wicked case of bronchitis my senior year. And I'll tell you, I was out there in the snow trying to, you know, I guess trying desperately to smoke through the phlegm and the like congested lungs.
Right.
And I was so sick that for 2 weeks, I actually didn't have enough lung capacity to inhale.
Mm.
And when I was done with the bronchitis, I thought, okay, this is an opening. Let me just keep going. But it's now, it's hard for me to do the math, 1990, where are we now, 2000, what, 27 years? If the right Bruce Springsteen song comes on.
My God.
I want to smoke. There are friends of mine from college that if I'm around them, I want to smoke. I'll tell you why. There's some science behind this. The experts that research addiction and habits, they basically call addiction a habit dysfunction. And habits are automated behaviors that get triggered by other people They get triggered by time of day. They get triggered by the environment that you're in. They get triggered by sound. They get triggered by a situation that you might be in. So, for example, a really kind of neutral habit might be that when you're in a meeting at work, that's a situational trigger. If you're the kind of person that doesn't talk, you might have a habit of just taking notes. Mm-hmm. And that sitting in the meeting will trigger you without even thinking to just start note-taking, because that's what you always do. With cigarettes, it's really difficult because there's the trigger of the alarm goes off, I need a smoke. There's I've just brushed my teeth, I need a smoke. There's I've just poured a cup of coffee, and the smell of the coffee, the time of day, the sound of it hitting the cup, that all triggers the part of your brain that goes into automatic. And so when you start to understand that that's really what you're dealing with, because the chemical dependency and the chemicals in your body from cigarettes leave in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have a little bit of compassion for yourself, that you're literally in a situation where everything in your house is going to remind you of a cigarette. And the only way to deal with it is to redirect yourself the moment you feel the craving. So I'm asking you if you actually want to quit, because I think your entire struggle in life is going to come down to your story up until now. How old are you?
43.
You look fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Even for being a horrible smoker.
The first 43 years of your life, your story is the rebel.
Yes.
And there's part of the rebel, Kim the rebel, that really works. Right? But in order for the next chapter to begin, we got to figure out who you are in this next chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will be able to figure out when the rebel has snuck in and when it's time for you to pivot and actually be the Kim that's in this next chapter. And so I ask you with all sincerity if you actually want to quit.
I do.
Okay.
I 100% do.
Why?
I take what my boyfriend loves to say, cigarette breaks. So I'm at home and I need to, you know, clean the house or something. Okay, let me just smoke one more cigarette and then I'll get up and do it. And then I'm fucking around on the computer and 20 minutes later, oh, let me just have one more cigarette. So I don't do anything because I'm too busy sitting there smoking, doing nothing. So it holds me back from actually getting up and doing things like cleaning the house, like going outside, like taking a walk, things
gotcha.
Like that.
Okay.
It really holds me back. It's weird.
Well, what it's become is it's become a very physical and repeated form of procrastinating.
Yeah.
That's what it's become.
Yeah.
Whenever you don't want to do something, it's your way to quit over and over and over again from life.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Wow. Okay.
So what did you just, what just happened for you when I said it that way?
That was a huge realization. I am. I see. I don't even, it's funny. I can fully acknowledge, that I don't start things because I'm going to quit, but I didn't associate that with having a cigarette.
Yeah. It's
That's
your
my
way
of quitting.
Uh-huh.
Holy shit, Mel. You're a genius.
Not really. The irony is with the smoking is you're trying to quit. And so that's why you don't see the fact that smoking is actually the way that you quit and opt out of life. And that's why I was doubting whether or not you actually want to quit, because I can see that it is like a fortress that you can put yourself in.
Yeah.
It's a protection mechanism. And it is a fuck you to life and all the things that you need to do. And that's also really sad.
Yeah. It's pathetic. I don't want to be that person anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. There's too much life to live. There's too much to enjoy. There's too much to explore. There's too much fun to be had.
And you're a really fun person. I mean, if I think about how fun you are trapped in your house doing nothing but smoking and shopping online, I can't imagine what would happen if we turn you loose.
Yeah, I like a crazy amount of my shopping.
One of the patterns for me that was debilitating, that took me a very long time to see, was that I was so hardwired to not want to disappoint people. And I was so hardwired to lie. I mean, I was such a fucking liar growing up. I lied about stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. Stupid stuff. What'd you eat for lunch? If I'm talking to a vegetarian, I had a salad. If I'm talking to somebody that likes hamburgers, I had a hamburger. I mean, right. I just was a chameleon. And it wasn't until I connected the dots and realized, holy shit, the reason why I do this is because it was a strategy that I developed when I was in fourth grade. I had an incident where I was molested by an older kid on a ski vacation that our family had taken. You know, one of the other family's kids mm-hmm. had done this to me in the middle of the night. Very confusing, upsetting situation. I come downstairs. My mom is right there. I'm like, I gotta tell her. And as I round the corner, I see the kid that did it sitting at the table.
Oh, God.
And she turns around and says, how'd you sleep?
And you said, great.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it was this moment, just like your quitting moment with the baton twirling, where it cemented a strategy that I then used until I was 27 years old. And which was assess the situation and say whatever it is that makes things okay.
Mm-hmm.
And until I kind of connected the dots between like the behavior as the adult and this strategy that I like this lying, like why the fuck was I a lie? Why do I fucking keep doing this? Mm-hmm. Why can't I just be myself? Until I connected the dots between kind of that.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away. Seriously.
Tell me about the negative self-talk while you're sitting there having your coffee and your smoke.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. It's like, why am I still sitting here? Why don't I just go downstairs? It's downstairs. It's not far. You lazy piece of shit. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up. What the fuck's wrong with you? Get up, you idiot. Yeah, but the cat, she's so warm on my lap and this coffee's so good. And oh my God, I need one more cigarette. Oh my God. Oops. No, it's been an hour and a half. I should probably go get in the shower. God, you're a piece of shit. You're so fat. No wonder why you're so fat, you dumbass. Go downstairs. You don't even have to go downstairs. Go downstairs, get your mat and bring it up here and then you can do some stretching. It's real hard. Stretching. Idiot ass.
You're such a rebel that you're even rebelling against yourself.
It's awful.
Well, it's because you're not out in the world, so you don't have anything else to rebel against, so this whole fucking thing is turned on you.
Yeah. It's awful.
I mean, imagine if you directed the rebel and all that energy at a cause or at something that you actually cared about changing.
Yeah, imagine if all the time I sat smoking, hating myself, if I took all of that energy, and I tell this to myself all the time, if you took all of this and redirected it into this hard thing called stretching,
well,
you might feel better.
That's not going to do anything for your ass. I've been doing it for 15 years. It's not done anything for my ass. At our age, we got to lift weights, which you could do while you're smoking, by the way. Because if you can't get in a downward dog with a cigarette in your mouth, you're going to get ashes on your mat.
But you could probably ignite my hair.
Yeah, you could smoke and do bicep curls, though.
Can you imagine going into 24-hour fitness? Is this a smoking gym? Where's the smoking section?
I actually think there's a business opportunity.
Yeah.
Forget the Fitspo on Instagram.
Yeah.
You should create an entire social media parody account.
Yeah.
Of you exercising with a cigarette in your mouth and doing instructional videos about how to smoke and lift.
Seriously, and jogging down the beach with all these series. And I live next to a Navy base too, so there's all these military dudes, like running. Just be like, what's up, dude? With my cigarette hanging out of my mouth. Hey! Sorry, I can only go 10 steps, I'm winded.
Yeah, like, will it stay lit if you're running? I've never tried to run with a cigarette.
Well, have I? No. I don't want to injure myself.
Oh my God.
So the rebel thing is actually pretty interesting. And I'm stubborn as shit too.
Most of the time when someone is stuck, the strategies that they've been using need to go away completely.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The rebel thing doesn't serve you at all. You're too much of a fuck you mm-hmm. and you don't feel anything anymore. Then it needs to disappear completely. Part of the rebel thing really works and it's really great and it's an absolutely incredible attribute in you. The problem is it's taken over every aspect of your life. So you're no longer using this power inside you called the rebel. It's using you. When you're in a situation where you can feel the automatic behavior kicking in, just like when you're in a situation where you're triggered to want to have a smoke, that you're aware that the trigger is starting to hook you and you've got the self-awareness and the self-mastery and the confidence to be able to be like, yeah, no, the rebel's not going to handle this. This person is going to handle this. I can give you a couple examples. So I 100% had the rebel thing. One of the biggest things in law school is trying to make this stupid ass thing called law review, mm-hmm. which is, you know, if you have a stick up your ass and you care about whether or not the period has the right spacing behind it, which I don't. So why I would ever even try to do this? It's literally like a, you know, some intellectual jerk off contest. And so I, hate law school, but I'm going to go for this thing because I feel like I should. I procrastinate for 3 weeks straight on a paper that you're supposed to spend 3 weeks research writing, site checking, everything else. I pull an all-nighter and the thing is due at 8:00 in the morning. It's 7:35.
Oh my God.
I've finished it. It's horrible. Like I don't even, like it is an embarrassment. The only reason why I actually turned it in is because you didn't put your name on it. It had to be blind graded. I realize at 7:35 that it's only like 11 pages. It should be 28 and spaced the right way. I don't have any printer paper.
Oh my God.
So I take my notebook and I rip out pages from the spiral bound.
Oh my God.
No, this is how much of a rebel I was like, well, fuck you. I'm still going to do it. I'm going to do it my way. And you watch it.
Yeah.
And I start to feed spiral bound
with all the frayed edges.
With all the frayed edges. And so it goes in the first page and then the second, third and fourth started printing on a fucking diagonal.
Okay. And there's shit stuck in the printer.
So I literally cut them apart, paste it together with tape.
Oh my God.
This was like an arts crafts project.
Kindergarten project.
I did. And then I ran across campus and slid it under the door. I of course did not make it, but that was my life. That was the kind of thing that I would do constantly. And then I would bitch about the rules and bitch about all the people that made it. And I'm too good for that. And the truth is I was basically a walking disaster around the things that required intentionality. And so I really relate to you. I have the rebel thing too, and it really serves me in business. I have turned it from something that runs my life into something that allows me to be rebellious enough to listen to my own instincts and to be rebellious enough that I can be stronger than my excuses and stronger than procrastination. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I limit myself with everything. Everything. So I can get up. I get up and I go to work and I do my job. No problem.
Yep.
There are days when I think that they're going to figure out that I'm a fraud, but I don't live in that at work.
Okay.
At work, I'm able to go to work, do my job. It's awesome. I love it. And that's like a non-issue for me. So I don't know why I can't translate that sort of confidence that I have at work into my regular life. I don't know. When I try and think about it, it's like I hit my head against a brick wall. Why can't I just do the things that I want? Why can't I just find something that gives me joy? Why can't I just find something that is an outlet for me? Why do I not have any hobbies? Why do I not have something that's mine, but I can then share with everybody else? Why? It's like a fucking brick wall. It's weird.
How do you answer the question? Why do you think it is?
The only thing that I can come back to is fear. Is fear of failure. Is fear of making an ass out of myself.
Well, the reason why you don't have any of those things is you're not fucking doing anything.
Like, yeah.
I don't believe that people figure out what brings them joy because they have an epiphany. I think that people figure out what brings them joy because they force themselves to follow their curiosity, mm-hmm. to try, to learn. So, for example, you said very earlier the piece about I'd love to be building stuff woodworking. Mm-hmm. That right there, that intuition about wanting to build something, that is gold. That's wisdom. And if you were to literally be a rebel about your wisdom and say, fuck it, I'm going to just sign up for a woodworking class on Tuesday nights at the community center. And you didn't stop for the smoking break and you didn't stop because you were afraid and you didn't stop to talk yourself out of it. That would start to open up your life in ways that you can't imagine. I'm not kidding. Like you are a natural, an absolute natural at making people laugh. The problem is it's become the way that you shield yourself from the pain.
Big time.
That you feel.
It's a big time coping mechanism.
Do you worry that your life is going to go by and you will have never figured this out?
I think about it in terms of not am I going to be like this forever, but when am I going to get off my ass? What is stopping me? What is holding me back? Like I'm so focused on the why that I don't just get up and do it.
The thing that's been missing is the how. And how do you break the habits? And one of the biggest insights for you is actually this insight around quitting with smoking. Mm-hmm. That's the smoking has become the thing that you do to stop yourself from doing everything. What do you want the next chapter of your life to look like?
It looks like self-love. It looks like self-care, not being so busy doing things, but being busy enough where I don't have time to sit there and wallow, where I don't allow myself that time that is so comforting to me. That time that I'm sitting for an hour and a half in front of my computer is such a habit that it's so comforting. And so to leave that is super scary. So to be able to wake up in the morning and immediately go downstairs.
So to fill your time with growth.
Right.
Instead of fuck you.
Right.
Maybe it's as simple and as stupid as the fact that something happened when you were in fourth grade. It's the dumbest story on the planet about the stupid baton twirling that you quit. And in that moment of quitting, it relieved all the anxiety that you had about putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you said to yourself in your puny little brain at the age of 9 with your ass hanging out of your leotard, oh, I don't have to do anything that makes me uncomfortable.
Yep.
And when people push me, I'll just be a rebel.
Yep.
And it became like a moment of clarity for you, and you stuck with it.
Yep.
And that the issue is really very simple, and the story looking back is very simple. And that is that you look back and you look at this and you think, holy fuck, I mean, how dumb is that? Mm-hmm. That I did something when I was 9 years old, and I've now been repeating it as a pattern. Like an addiction, like smoking.
Yeah.
And I've never had control of it because I've never seen how I have a 9-year-old response to every single thing in my life.
God. 9-year-old response. I look at my 9-year-old nephew and think, oh my God, you're just such a baby. You're still a baby.
Well, that's how you're acting.
Like a fucking baby?
Yes. You are, but you hide it by laughing and by being a rebel.
Oh, my God. That's pretty gross, man.
You're a baby about how many cigarettes you have. You're being a baby about the frickin' going down and doing yoga. You're being a baby about going out and hiking. And you call it these big words like fear and, you know, and I don't love myself.
I'm so educated.
Big fucking baby. That's all that you are. And it's the next chapter's about growing up.
Mm. That's crazy.
How so? What are you thinking?
That I would be stuck in that sort of mentality at 43.
Do you think you are? Everybody. Dude, I was stuck. I still get triggered by disappointing people. It's a pattern that I learned in fourth grade that worked really well, and then all of a sudden it didn't. But the problem is it became a fucking habit, like smoking becomes a habit. And even though you want to get rid of it, you can't, because it's hardwired as a pattern in your brain. That's what a habit is. A habit is anything that you do without thinking. It's a pattern that you repeat over and over and over again. When you put on your jeans this morning, did you put your right leg in your pants first or your left?
I don't know.
Well, think about it. I mean, you do it, you put the same, imagine putting on a pair of jeans.
My left.
Yes. So that's a habit. When you pull on a pair of pants, you don't think about it. You see the pants, your mind is triggered. Oh, we're gonna pull the pattern off the shelf that she always does. She always sticks the left leg in first, but you don't even think about it. The same thing is true about being a baby. You don't even think about it. You just are one. A funny, rebellious one, but you're still a baby. Got a lot of drama about all the shit you need to do, and you're like, but you're just being a fucking baby.
A big whiner.
Totally.
A big whiner in my own head.
Yes. Maybe everything was so awesome in your family that the only drama was the shit you created in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't live your life. You did. But what I do know is that those old patterns do not serve you. And so I think maybe the language of being, I'm being a fucking baby, that's enough to interrupt the bitching and make you just go downstairs and do what you need to do. As a 43-year-old woman, you're realizing you want more out of your life, that you want to grow, that you want to experience the world, that you want to travel, that you want to be seen. Mm-hmm. And while that's scary, because your ass may be hanging out of the leotard when you try the spin.
Exposed.
This is about you retraining how you respond to the things that trigger you. The answers are very simple.
Yeah.
You're either being a fucking baby or you're being what? What's the next chapter? Let's put a label on it.
So I have this funny thing that I made up.
Tell me.
It's my Kim Possibility list.
Kim Possibility? Oh my God, it's like a superhero. I love it. Oh my God. Okay, so you either are a fucking baby or you're Kim Possibility.
Or I'm a goddamn superhero.
Yes.
So everything that I think is impossible. I think that I can't quit smoking. I think that I can't get healthy. And so I've created my Kim Possibility list.
I love this.
I'm going to take the impossible for me, the things that I thought are impossible my entire life, and I'm going to make them possible. And it's not that hard. You just told me that it is so simple and
it's so,
so
simple.
Stupid.
But this is what you're going to walk out of here with. You're either being a fucking baby, and the attributes of the baby are this. You think, you smoke, you self-criticize, and you quit. Or your Kim Possibility. Kim Possibility is in action. Kim Possibility is trying. Kim Possibility is learning. Kim Possibility is actually doing it. Those are the two distinctions. That's it. It's that simple.
It really is that simple. That's crazy. That's crazy.
You will never feel like not having a smoke. You will never feel like doing yoga. You'll never feel like exercising. You'll never feel like looking in the mirror and being like, you know, my ass is pretty nice for 43. And so when you start to understand that your feelings are going to rise up throughout the day, you might feel overwhelmed, you might feel stressed out, you might feel afraid, you might feel frustrated, you might feel lazy, you might feel like having a smoke. Those feelings will come and go just like the waves outside your window, but you have a choice. You also have a choice about what you think. So even though feelings might rise up and they might trigger you to think, I'm so lazy, I'm so stupid, you always have a choice to catch yourself, and 5-4-3-2-1 Kim Possibility steps into place. But Kim Possibility actually chooses what she makes herself do. And she chooses what she thinks about. And that is the difference. Does that explain it?
Yeah.
And so when you start to catch yourself hesitating, that's when Kim Possibility needs to show up and just go, screw it, I'm going to do it. Instead of, because when the baby shows up, you've got a bias toward overthinking and then quitting. When Kim Possibility shows up, you know you're going to do the opposite of what the baby does, which is you're just going to do it. In every moment, you're going to get to choose whether you pick up a cigarette and quit or whether you walk away from the smoke and you step into your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get to choose whether or not you're the asshole or the baby or the rebel or all those things that don't work or whether you're Kim Possibility. You get to choose, and that's both the biggest hurdle and the most amazing gift that we've all been given.
Yeah. And I want to have that feeling of, like, you know, the people that do the Boston Marathon that cross that finish line that just thought that there was no way in hell that they were ever going to get to that finish line.
Well, I think it's every morning when you get down to that studio.
Yeah. I know that the one thing that I will focus on is loving my physical body, because I only get one. And for 43 years, I've destroyed it. I haven't helped it. I haven't loved it. This has been the biggest gift for me. It's like I can't go home and live with myself and keep repeating these patterns when I've been given such an amazing, simple gift.
You can.
I can.
The question
is...
And
it would be really easy to.
Yep.
But I can't live my life like this until the last days of my life.
Awesome. I hope you won't.
I have been given the biggest gift. I can stop trying to figure out why. Why? Well, it doesn't matter why now. Now the why doesn't matter. I could break it down for forever and still probably never find the answer. So I'm going to give that up. And if I don't take complete advantage of it, I'm an asshole.
Don't you just love her? I mean, first of all, Kim should be doing stand-up. I've never met anyone who describes self-torture in such a hilarious way. Now, she kept calling this coaching session a gift. So let me unpack this gift for you in three specific takeaways. Takeaway number one was the topic of quitting. We all have ways of quitting when things get hard or when we just don't feel motivated to push ourselves. Kim told you she quits all day long by grabbing a smoke. My form of quitting? I reach for a Manhattan. I'm sure you have a form of quitting, too. Maybe you veg in front of the TV or you mainline social media. Identifying negative patterns as a form of quitting is a powerful step that's going to help you stop these patterns. Because when you identify the patterns as a form of quitting, you've got the power to stop it. The second takeaway is the topic of addiction. Now, we spoke a lot about Kim's struggle to quit smoking, and you probably remember that I called smoking a habit dysfunction. I didn't just make that up. People a lot smarter than me have been studying addiction and have determined that addictions are just forms of habit dysfunctions. And I think it's a really powerful explanation for addictions, because here's the problem. There's many problems with addictions, but here's a problem with addiction that makes it difficult to stop them. And that is the fact that there's so much emotion tied up in the things that we do that are destructive. And it can become super difficult for you to change an addictive behavior because of all that emotion. But when you think about addiction as patterns of behavior, as habits, then we can use science to isolate the trigger and the behavior pattern you keep repeating. And that way, you can focus on just changing the behavior, and you can separate the emotion from it and work on that with a professional. So in case you're struggling with addiction, Here's how you can use this insight about addictions being a habit dysfunction and all the science around it to make a positive change. First, all habits have a trigger and then a behavior pattern that you repeat. So the first thing I want you to do is I want you to identify all of the things that trigger you throughout the day to reach for that thing you're addicted to. Whether you're addicted to smokes, or drinking, or social media, or porn, or anything else. Triggers can be anything like time of day, people, places, smells. It could just be stress. Then what I want you to do is I want you to sit down and make a plan for what you will be doing for every one of these triggers instead of the addiction. And I need you to do it ahead of time. This strategy is called if-then planning. And based on research, it is proven to dramatically boost your success. The final takeaway, it's about childhood strategies. Now you're going to hear a lot about this topic from me. It's the idea that we've all developed strategies when we were kids in order to deal with the situations that were upsetting or abusive. Now for Kim, you'll recall that she described a moment in her life when she quit baton twirling. Why did she quit? Well, she didn't want to be in a leotard in front of her entire school. And guess what? Quitting worked, and it became a pattern. Every one of us has a place in our lives where we are stuck in a pattern that we invented when we were kids. And by the time you finish listening to these 8 coaching sessions, you will have likely identified that pattern in your life. Now, the way you can start working on it right now is to stop focusing on what's wrong with you and start asking yourself, what happened to you? And by the way, what happened to Kim? Well, Kim's doing dynamite. She quit smoking, she's doing more yoga, and she's got something she wants to say to you.
I would tell them that they have no idea of how much beauty and how much potential they have, and they have to weed through all their own bullshit to find that for themselves. And there's nobody that's going to convince them of it but themselves. But they have the power and they have the potential.
In this coaching session, you're going to meet a former NFL player named Marcus. He's here because he wanted my advice on kicking ass in business.
My name is Marcus Ogden. I'm 37 years old. I'm from Washington, D.C. I played in the NFL from 2003 to 2009. I am a keynote speaker.
Since Marcus is a keynote speaker, he's also a great storyteller. And in this coaching session, you're going to learn the power of owning your whole story in life and in business, including the painful parts. And for Marcus, that means telling the story of what it feels like to go from being an NFL player to owning a business to then losing everything.
Saying, my God, why me? Like, why the hell did you basically just take from me everything? My house gone, both my trucks repossessed in the same week, gone. I was just trying to basically scrape to stay alive.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Asha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Get me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name's Liz. I'm from Brazil.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall. The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit. Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick Ass with Mel Robbins.
There she is.
Oh, my God. I need a hug.
How are you?
Oh, great to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So tell me, why are you here? What can I help you with?
I'm kind of stuck in my business where I'm trying to get to that next level. I get up at 5 o'clock every morning, go to the gym. I'm out there talking to people through LinkedIn. I have a lot of this through LinkedIn. I mean, I'm active on there all the time and meeting people and going different, you know, gigs, and I get all that. But to become yourself, you really need to have that quantum leap. And I don't know how to get there.
I can certainly help you. Because it sounds like what you want to do, and I can relate to it, we're going to get into it,
mm-hmm.
is this idea that you put in the work, you check all the boxes,
mm-hmm.
and you grow, but then you hit the ceiling,
mm-hmm.
and you start to feel stuck,
mm-hmm.
and you have no idea, or at least I didn't at the time, how the hell do I create a quantum leap for
right.
myself
correct.
When I feel like I've hit the ceiling and I don't know what to do next? So tell me... your story.
Okay, so I'm originally from Washington, D.C. I was raised by a single father. My brother, Jonathan Dawkins, is actually in the NFL Football Hall of Fame. I played in the NFL from 2003 to 2009. Got out of the NFL, had a tremendous time struggling with the transition. Like, what do I do next? Like, you say, you know, you're lost. Like, what is the next piece? So I ended up starting a construction business. I got a business partner, which was a mistake. He had been in this business of construction for almost 40 years. The problem was I was a commercial contractor. He was a residential contractor. By the time I realized he wasn't in the same stratosphere as doing work for commercial, it was too late.
Gotcha.
I already signed a bond. I was already on the hook. So everything was going great, though. We went from $0 to eight-figure business in 5 years.
Holy cow.
I'm a people person. I can market well. I can go help close deals. That is my strong suit. So I was a CEO in charge of marketing, getting jobs, all collections, all that. So in 2012, we worked for a very large contract and took on a job for $4 million, hit a snag, and I had to spend millions of dollars in 90 days unexpectedly. Was not planned. It was in the end of 2012. So it was probably like August, September. So I spent the money. It's now December. Went to go get paid back my change order by the developer and contractor. They denied it. I never got a signed document because they said, Marcus, I shook their hand. Oh, we're going to take care of you. Oh, and by the way, if you don't do this, we're going to call in your bond. So they put pressure on me. I was young and my partner said, what do we do? And he said, let's go for it. And I didn't get a signed contract because I was really under the gun. The concrete contractor was pushing me. The developer was pushing me and I was very young and inexperienced.
Right.
So I did the job and I did not get paid back by the developer contractor. And I ended up going bankrupt in 2013. So then I go to Carolina with the NFL's help, and I apply for what's called the Gene Upshaw Trust Assistance Fund. It's a fund that helps players that are in financial hardship that can prove it with tax documentation, bank statements. So when I moved down to Carolina from Baltimore, the NFL helped get me a job at Merrill Lynch. I was working there for a couple months. I got let go because I wasn't going to pass the series. I was failing on my practice test.
Now, hold on. You went to Howard.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy school to get into.
Nope.
And what did you...
Finance.
So how embarrassing was it for you to be a major in finance,
uh-huh.
a Howard graduate,
uh-huh.
and go bankrupt,
uh-huh.
and then get a job with the trust from the NFL and the uh-huh. collective bargaining agreement.
Very nice.
And... get a job at Merrill Lynch and then get let go because you can't get past the Series 7.
You know,
I mean, what was it like in your head?
It was a nightmare. I call it walking hell on earth. It's like you realize that what you did in school, you're not good at anymore because I had graduated over almost 10 years ago. And all I knew for that real time for most of that time was football. When I got to Merrill Lynch, everything I would study in college, I forgot. And trying to reprogram my brain and reinvent myself in that lane was a mistake.
Yeah.
Horrible mistake. And I ended up getting let go and I got to hire to a construction company. I'm like, yes, construction company. I'm all ready to go. I know what to do. Hired on Monday, fired on Friday.
Holy cow.
Fired twice and within a week.
So what did you make that mean? Because obviously you got to process it.
I made it mean that I was in the wrong space. And that I needed to go back and find my passion, which was football.
Now, how the hell, because that sounds like a transformed idea. Because if I got fired twice within a week,
right.
I'd be like, the world sucks. There is no God. This isn't fair.
Oh,
fuck all of you. You know, what happened? I don't believe that you were that transformed.
Well,
come on.
Okay. So let me go back.
I'm going to tell you how to quantum leap your motivational speaking business, but I want to know you as a human being.
So when I got fired the second time, okay, I got hooked on alcohol. I drank.
What was your drink of choice?
It was Miller Lite and Tanqueray and Tonic. And I couldn't really
Tanqueray? How the hell can you afford Tanqueray?
I couldn't really afford it. So it really was Miller Lite. I had Tanqueray every once in a while, but it was Miller Lite.
You gotta drink a lot of Miller Lite. Oh, did you balloon?
Oh yeah.
How much weight did you gain?
I came down to Carolina probably about 280. Then, I got fired twice. I probably went from like 280 to about 330 in probably about a